And on the line, I've got Graham Kins, former leader of the now defunct McGillicuddy Series Party. Morning, Graham.
Good morning, Aaron.
And beside me in the studio, I've got Penny Bousfield, who's a former candidate also for the McGillicuddy Series Party. Good morning.
Good morning.
So there's an election on at the moment, which, Graham, I understand you don't know too much about what's going on.
No, I've assiduously avoided it. I got my election pack in the mail and I went, "Who? What are all these crazy parties that just sort of put it back on the to-do list?"
Right. So there is one thing. I wanted to start off straight into something that's actually kind of serious. There's been a little bit of violence directed at candidates around this election, including our local Labor MP who had her face kind of slapped by somebody in Inglewood recently. And
it's nothing new. When we were unveiling our candidate in Tauranga in 90, when was it? It was during the Tauranga by-election, was that 92? One of Winston Peters' supporters came and bashed me with her handbag.
With the handbag?
Yeah, she hit me over the head repeatedly with a handbag while screaming at me. This woman was probably in her late 80s, I'd say.
So you didn't feel too threatened?
Not especially. I mean, I figured I could outrun her, but, you know, so I just stood there going, this is assault, notice this, everybody.
Okay, all right, so it's not new. What I was I guess the question I was going to ask both of you was, because the McGillicuddy Party was sort of famous for injecting humour into things, maybe that's what everyone thought, and I was going to say, were you guys the solution to this level of tension by getting people to laugh at political events? But it sounds like no is the answer.
What do you reckon, Penny?
Well, yeah, we definitely did inject fun and humour into things to the point where the National Party in, I think, was it one or two elections, Graham, sent cars out to pick up some of the McGillicuddy candidates to bring them to meetings because we were the fun people. But as far as, you know, that sort of level of tension, the whole McGillicuddy thing started with pacifist warfare, so, you know, we're not into violence.
Did people laugh? Just like you're standing in a hall, and one by one the candidates get up and say their thing, and you guys get up and say things that are viewed as absurd. Were people actually laughing?
Hell yes.
Yeah. Not all though. Some people got thoroughly irritated at the fact that we weren't being as quotes serious unquotes as they expected a politician to be.
Right.
But, you know, but mostly people did find it moderately funny, seeing as most of what we did was very carefully aimed satire and absurdity.
Okay, and there's a kind of a question around a line that I think you didn't want to cross, and we had a bit of a discussion by email about how this would go. And I did. I don't think I presented this idea, but I did have this idea that it would be funny for the former or the now defunct McGillicuddy Series Party to endorse a candidate for the government for this election. And I feel like that actually might have crossed the line that you don't want to cross. Like, it would be funny for someone to receive that endorsement that they would help achieve the McGillicuddy aim of the Great Leap Backwards. But it also is getting into actually criticising a party as well. I mean, where is that line for you, Graham?
Well, since we first entered the world of politics in 84, I've noticed that many of our ideas have, in various formats, been adopted by various parties. And we're not shy in going, "We thought of that," you know, and it can just be an interesting expression like the Great Leap Backwards, or could actually be genuine policies. But I'm afraid I don't have a list of them in the back of my head, and I haven't been following this election at all. So I'd be perfectly happy to poke fun at a particular political aspirant in this election had I the information. I mean, although I'm no longer in politics, I'm still a human being in New Zealand with an opinion, so I'd be perfectly happy to mock somebody by going, "Yes, that's a McGillicuddy thing that they're unwittingly doing, but I have no idea, sorry, because I've completely avoided this election."
Penny, you're actually paying a little bit more attention to the election, aren't you?
Probably.
Probably. You look like you don't want to admit to it now. But you were telling me...
I do read about politics and, as you know, quite happy to argue about it with people, but yeah.
So you are voting?
Yes.
Yeah. Graham, are you voting?
I don't think I will. No, I can't. I looked through the form and I don't recognise any of the parties really. And I certainly don't. I haven't met any of the candidates for my area. I'm in the Waipara electorate. And I figure if a person doesn't, if you don't know the person who you're voting for, they don't, therefore they don't know you. And if they don't know you, then how can they make decisions that take your concerns into account when they when they're sitting in Parliament? So, you know.
Mm. So I was talking just before about the line that you didn't want to cross, and there seems to be, look at, well, I have to admit, Penny's just told me the McGillicuddy Serious page on Wikipedia is not terribly accurate, but it was giving the impression, she's rolling her eyes at me now in the studio.
It's just gibberish. I don't know who wrote it.
Well, right. It's even worse.
It's maybe a third correct-ish, but it's certainly a very... A strain. It's a view through a very small and peculiar distorted window into the room that was and is the McGillicuddy Serious Party.
I don't know if you've looked at it recently, Graham, but I actually had a squiz this morning because one of my old Queenstown friends had posted something about McGillicuddy's online, and just as I was having breakfast, I looked at that and there was something I thought, oh, I need to look that up. And, you know, knowing that Wikipedia isn't accurate, but the first place I went was Wikipedia. And I think it's been rewritten. It's way, way longer than it used to be and even more inaccurate now. It's full of all kinds of strange stuff.
Well, I mean, Wikipedia is crazy, isn't it? Because, I mean, if you look me up, it says that I was born in Scotland, which, of course, is complete bollocks. I was born in Rotorua.
Right. Okay, well, based on what it says, there seemed to be a hint that there came a time in the party where the people who had more serious political intentions than you guys. Is that true?
It's partly true, perhaps. And it would go like this. After MMP came in and it became even more difficult than it was previously for anything that we did or said to get any media attention and by extension get known about by the bulk of New Zealand's population, some people within the McGillicuddy Serious Party went, we're getting bloody nowhere and we're wasting our time, and they went off and joined other parties.
Actual real political parties. That's a terrible phrase to use in these circumstances.
Well, other political parties.
Yeah. And some of them stayed in politics for quite a while, didn't they?
They did indeed.
Yeah, Materia too, right?
I was perfectly happy for them to permeate into other parties because, I mean, it was pretty clear to me that we weren't ever going to get a seat in Parliament, let alone become government. So, but if you can get McGillicuddies in other parties infiltrating, then you've got a you've got a better chance of McGillicuddy-izing New Zealand.
So how serious was the intention of the party? Because, see, for me, like I all I knew about you at the time was what I saw on TV. So intentional figures of fun is about what I would have said from that conclusion. But Penny gave me a copy of the manifesto from
96.
And there's obviously, it feels like a serious criticism of Western society in there and some serious... intent, but what were you serious about, you guys?
I'll let you answer first, Penny. I've been talking too much.
I think it was a whole mixture of things, a whole layering of things. I mean, I was there at the beginning of the McGillicuddy Highland Army, the pacifist warfare thing. I wasn't there at the beginning of the party. I came in later. But, you know, it was founded on funism, this idea of, like, the most important thing in life is to have fun. The Jacobite Renaissance, which was, you know, three-quarters of New Zealanders can claim some Scottish ancestry, and then the whole romantic thing about Bonnie Prince Charlie. So one of our number was, you know, Bonnie Prince Jeffy in a very sort of Dalai Lama way of, like, the right person, the knowledge would descend as to who the right person was. It wasn't, you know... Hereditary, and
Read about
and,
that.
And then a whole lot of performance art and people basing ideas on situationism, and Some of it was just to be silly, and some of it was definitely taking a crack at satirical things. And yeah, and the whole Great Leap Backwards, that was based on your mayoral campaigns, wasn't it, Graham? Because you originally wanted to...
Yeah,
you'd wanted to put a moat around Hamilton, divert the Waikato River and make a moat around Hamilton. And that turned into this whole Great Leap Backwards of we're going to take New Zealand back to being a medieval, feudal, subsistence, tribal society. Yeah, because that will solve everything, which is also mocking, you know, a thing that's really around now, like the old days were better, you know, we should go back to how things were. And this is like, if we're going to go back, let's go back, you know, 700 or 800 years. That'd be great.
Is that sort of, you're in line with that, Graham?
It was we were tapping into people's nostalgia and a wish for the good old days, but and also the whole fix everything at once thing, that was sort of... That's a bit like, for example, how do we deal with poverty, you know? So, okay, so various people go, okay, well, we'll improve education, you know, but what about, you know, nourishment, you know? So it's clear that when massive change is required, you have to fix everything at once. And so we figured, well, you know, the only way to avoid all the ills that are part and parcel of the late 20th century, perhaps early 21st century, is to go back into the 17th century.
Well, it does make sense in that context, doesn't it?
Yeah, we cobbled it all together. So very early on, when the McGillicuddy, Clan McGillicuddy, as Penny said, that the thing that we were doing nationwide was we had a whole lot of non-violent Highland regiments who, I guess you would say, they were doing street theatre, combat-based street theatre. And when we first got into politics, I did a huge flow chart, sort of big Venn diagram type thing of all the ideas that all the McGillicuddies had ever said that were worth remembering, and wrote them all down and worked out if they were connected to each other. And I suddenly realised this all fits together into a concise ideology. I was flabbergasted by it, and I entitled it the McGillicuddy Plan to Cheer Up New Zealand. This is before we had a political party, and I went, "Well, here's our plan." And I showed it to people, and they went, yeah, good God, this makes sense. This actually makes sense. That's crazy. And so it was then that we realized, so it wasn't just wacky humorous, and it wasn't just satirical. It was a peculiar alternative, perfectly valid alternative.
Yeah, and that was part of the big appeal for me, because, you know, I've been involved in the McGillicuddy Flying Claymores and everything, and then I'd moved away. I was living down in Queenstown, and I think I came up to Hamilton for a holiday, visited Graham, and you showed me the first manifesto. I read it and went, this is brilliant. And then the next election, Graham asked me to be involved and stand in Otago. But, you know, I mean, I loved McGillicuddy stuff. I was a McGillicuddy. But the thing that really appealed to me was, like, the making sense, the coherent whole thing. I was like, here is a vision, even though it's absurd, here is a vision of how we want New Zealand to be. Why isn't anyone else doing this? Why aren't any of the other parties going, this is our vision, this is where we want, what we want New Zealand to look like?
And that's, like, since you gave me the manifesto, that's what I realised. Like I said before, all I knew is what I saw on TV, that intentional figures of fun. But there was stuff in there in the manifesto that I agreed with on just a serious level. There's also, you know, you threw the absurd things in as well. So therefore, we're going to give free dung, or, you know.
Yeah.
But was that a policy, or did I read that in Wikipedia? Oh my goodness.
I don't remember that one.
I think that's a Wikipedia.
That
one.
Might be a Wikipedia. Yeah. Oh my God, it's already happening.
The thing about what you're reading in Wikipedia, and that, I mean, it could well be that one of the candidates did say that once somewhere. Because, you know, there were a lot of candidates over the course of the 16 years, and that would be perfectly reasonable, because our view of how New Zealand should operate was a decentralised system, with each tribe and clan being semi-autonomous, and we ran our political party in the same way. So we encouraged regional autonomy, and so long as the candidates stuck within the general McGillicuddy framework of talking about the Great Leap Backwards and about funism, and were poking fun at their rivals who needed to have the mickey taken out of them, and poking fun at themselves, very important, we sort of let them dream it up as they went. And so it could well be that everything, that all the stuff that's not Central McGillicuddy ideology that's in Wikipedia, it could actually be, all be genuine, but from one person who said it once somewhere.
Right, so, all right, fair enough. We can go with that. Now, like, can we go back even further? Like, you talked about how you discovered this kind of coherent ideology within what you guys were doing. What were you doing exactly before this McGillicuddy Serious Party?
So the Clan McGillicuddy had been around for nearly 8 years before the political party was formed. And for six years before the party, we'd had the McGillicuddy Highland Army, where we dressed in kilts and did quite elaborate, sometimes provocative, amusing, non-violent combat-based street theatre, so to say, battling with rolled-up newspaper swords and flower bombs. But often there was a month-long preamble. We'd invent some sort of conflict. We'd find an opposition. We'd invent some conflict and some reason to be angry with each other, and build it up, and then dispel the whole thing in a sort of two-hour piece of performance that was highly ritualized, had lots of rules, had a cup of tea at halftime, and then had an agreed ending, and that would be the conflict resolution. So it's quite closely based on quite a few primitive societies' approach to warfare, where warfare isn't a violent act, it's an aggressive act. So we differentiate between aggression and violence. Aggression is the theatrical display, violence is hurting one another. Mm. And so, certainly non-violent, aggressive theatrical display is a way of resolving conflicts. And we just, we'd dream up these conflicts, or sometimes they were sort of based slightly on an ill feeling that was going down at the time, and we'd done this for years and years and years, and had a nationwide network of these regiments. We called them regiments. They're all part of the same army, and they were sort of semi-autonomous street theater troops all around the country, and they converted easily into political cells, and so that's how the political party suddenly sprung up out of nowhere, because we already had the nationwide network.
Right.
It's sounding like a model for revolution, isn't it? Like guerrilla cells stage a military coup.
You've kind of explained the political party quite well with that background. But how do you start? I mean, you guys were kids once, and then you grew up and you became adults, and you maybe were students at university. Like, where did the seed for all? Like, this is quite absurdist. Like, absurdist, intentionally absurdist. Like, it's not like, yeah. I mean, how did that all come about? Were you reading stuff from? I don't know. What were you doing? How did it come about?
I was definitely at university. I met Graham at university. There was a bunch of guys from Rotorua Boys High that hung out together, and one of them was going out with one of my flatmates, and that's how I met Graham. And you guys, they ended up flatting together, and they had a lot of absurd stuff going on in their flat. They just used to do all kinds of things to amuse themselves and people who were visiting, and they had art installations and they do silly things. And the first thing was the tree surgeons, Graham?
It was either that or the curbside lectures that me and Renee gave on Heafy Terrace. Yeah, but it could have been the tree surgery thing.
Yeah, the tree surgery thing was opposite their flat on old house on Heafy Terrace. There's a whole lot of azalea bushes, and the council had them heavily pruned one time and left the branches lying around. And Graham and the rest of the guys went out and taped the branches back on and put a sign up saying AB McGillicuddy Tree Surgeons.
Tree Reconstruction Unit.
A tree reconstruction unit, was
right.
It? And AB McGillicuddy became a name for doing stunts under. And then you went down to Otago University for a year and caught the pacifist battling bug down there, didn't you?
Yeah, absolutely. Yes, I can't take any credit for inventing that. I witnessed the whole thing in 1978 at Otago University, and it was with an outfit called the Waitati Militia, who by then had joined the Wizard's Lot, Alf's Imperial Army, and there was a huge big battle against one of the halls of residence, Knox College at Otago University, and the president of the Students' Association Paul Gooley was leading the Knox College team, and they were all in drag. They're all dressed as women, as I remember, and we were all dressed as English or Scottish soldiers. I knew nothing about it. I just heard that it was happening, and I just invented a sort of a costume and turned up and just sort of took part in it as if I knew what I was doing, and I realized, this is very, very good. It's way more coordinated and grandest than anything the McGillicuddies had done previously, but I think the McGillicuddies would like to do something like this. And so at the Nambassa Hippie Festival, we had a high-level summit and decided that we were going to go to war, because a lot of us went to that festival. We decided, yes, we will form an army, we will go to war, and we're going to get kilts together, and we're going to do this whole Scottish thing properly.
Yeah. I remember being a student, and in my group of friends, we did like absurd things. Like, I can kind of see how, like, at that age and that kind of context, that kind of happens. But I was a student in the 90s, and my first year was the first year that they brought in student fees that were more than, like, a nominal $100.
Yeah, and killed a lot of it off.
Yeah, and I remember watching the Capping Week stunts. Always loved the Capping Week stunts, but every year there were less of them, and they became just a little bit lamer. And my final year, which was 94, there was just someone made a fake boulder. Oh, no, someone put a fake body underneath a boulder sitting next to one of the things. I was at Auckland University. So,
yeah,
it very quickly killed. It seemed to kill off that, and I doubt that there's anything like this going on now.
I think you've correctly identified the social climate in which these sorts of things were going on. And I have to say, the McGillicuddies were really no different from any other university student group in New Zealand in the 70s. We all flattened together, we're all doing oddball stuff, and we're highly social, and people come and visit us. And that had been happening and was happening all over the place. The one big difference is we had a name. And it wasn't just a name like, you know, the Lumberjack Society or the, you know, whatever. It was Clan McGillicuddy. And so soon as we realised that we were a group of mutually self-adopting Scottish clan members, that gave the thing legs.
Right.
So without that name, we probably would have dissolved after about 4 years, like most university student groups.
So is it the word clan or the concept of a clan that did it?
I think so. I mean, the fact that we had a name, you know, and it was an official name, and it wasn't long before we were being treated as another Scottish clan by the New Zealand Scottish Associations and invited to do displays at the Highland Games and things.
Did you do that?
Oh, absolutely.
Did they know what they were getting?
Absolutely.
Okay, right, good.
Oh, yeah, the Scottish... Yeah, I mean, Scottish people have a very subtle sense of humour, and once they got over the fact that a bunch of people all in different kilts with long hair and nose piercings and whatever were calling themselves Scottish, and then they went, I see what you're doing, okay. And so once we had a chat to them, they went, yeah, okay, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay.
And that whole thing of giving it a name and making it a clan, it did work like a big extended family. You know, like I remember when I was living down in Queenstown, there'd be every so often random McGillicuddies that I didn't know would come through town, as well as the ones I did know, but people would turn up. I was working in a CD shop and they'd walk in and introduce themselves, and when I realised they were a McGillicuddy, it was like meeting someone that says, you find out is your second cousin,
right.
And you go, oh, do you have a place to stay? We've got a couch at our house, because you're a McGillicuddy, yeah. So.
It was, yeah. Yeah.
So we had the concept of the extended family before we had the name even. So that was what differentiated set us off on another path from other students. So as soon as we rented our first house, when all the other students, our contemporaries, were all going, okay, right, so we need to have flat meetings, and, you know, so they're all kind of autonomous, anarcho-syndicalist people. We're going... Within just days of getting the house, we went, no, actually, we're going to replicate a family structure, because we'd all been, all grown up in families all around New Zealand, North Island mostly. We're going to replicate a family structure, the thing that everybody else is happy to have got away from. We allocated the various family roles to all the people who lived there. And it was a very short jump from there for someone. Actually, Bonnie Prince Jeffy came back from visiting his parents and said, you know, if we're going to have a family, we probably need a name. And we go, oh, yeah, never thought of that. I suppose you're right. And he went, what about McGillicuddy? And we went, yes, that's it. Yeah, but the structure, that desire to have that family structure, which was, you know, a really huge extended family structure, that preceded even the name.
Mm, mm. Oh, that's a very human desire, really.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So there were, I know there have been similar things happen overseas, like in other countries, like it was Lord Such and the Monster
yes.
Raving Loony Party. Did you guys?
Yeah, so David Such was his name, Screaming Lord Such. He was a musician and a politician. He was actually involved in the British version of Radio Hierarchy, so pirate radio trying to do commercial pop music, but were being closed down by the BBC, and they had did the whole thing. Same. They're on a ship, you know, broadcasting off the coast. He was one of them, and he had a band called the Savages, I believe. And so he was so incensed with the inability for that music to get an airing, he became political, and he went into absurd politics. And a lot of his stuff was, you know, was very, it had a similar similar thrust and a similar impact to the McGillicuddy Serious Party stuff. You know, some of it was even adopted. So, you know, as a joke, he went something like, teenagers should be able to vote. And then a few years later, they could vote, you know, and some of his policies were actually adopted. I spent a day with him. I just randomly bumped into him in London. I went, ah, that's Screaming Lord Such. And he was campaigning for a seat in the European Parliament, and I spent the afternoon with him.
Did he actually get into Parliament anywhere?
No. But by that stage, he'd run in something like 62 elections. He'd spent a fortune on it.
Wow, he must have had a fortune to start with then.
No, I think he was just living in penury. I think he was very poor and just doing as many music gigs as he possibly could just to pay for his political career.
Mm. And I have heard, I'm struggling, this is just in the back of my mind, somewhere in Europe, like Northern Europe, like Iceland or somewhere like that.
Iceland, the Pirate Party?
Yes, people who were comedians, and they talked about getting up and making jokes and at political meetings, and the serious politicians being quite furious about it.
Yeah, I think they've got something like 17% of the seats in Iceland Parliament at the moment.
But Iceland did kind of fall apart. They had some serious economic problems a few years ago for getting carried away with neoliberalism, I guess you could call it. What would you have done? What would you guys have done if you'd actually got someone in Parliament?
Do you want to answer that, Penny?
if we got just one person, I think a lot of our thinking was predicated on getting all of us in. So I am not sure, Graham. I'm going to bat that back to you of what we'd do if we got one person in. Because we nearly did one election, didn't we? Was it Tim and Nelson was coming like second for a long time on the night until the votes actually evened out? At one point, we did think we'd get someone in.
Wow.
Yeah, and we would have got, I mean, if they didn't have the 5% threshold on the party vote when being translated into seats when it first came in, we would have got one person in.
Right.
We had, I think, 0.8% of the party vote, and that would have been one person. But it would have been a very lonely and difficult existence for one McGillicuddy Serious Party candidate in Parliament, I would have thought. But, you know, it would have been interesting. And it would have been especially interesting if the numbers stacked up, that they were able to hold a balance of power.
No, that would have been interesting.
They could have been a really massive spanner in some quite awful works, and I think New Zealand would be slightly better off now than it was than it is.
Yeah.
Had we been government, you know, like had we got enough votes to be government, we would have done the things we're talking about. We would have certainly tried. And I dare say I would have been assassinated by about 10 a.m. on day one.
Yes, yeah. I think as soon as you look like a serious contender, they start going to work on you.
A lot of people would have lost billions if we had got into power, and I'm sure one of them would have overreacted. Yeah. And I wouldn't be speaking to you today. I wouldn't. I don't think. But I would have done it. You know, it was worthwhile.
I would have been speaking to Penny about that Graham guy.
the Graham guy who they shot.
Yeah.
But we would have to have won the election for you to get in, because on the party list, to our party list was in inverse order. So Graham was at the bottom of it, because. Yeah, we didn't want the leader in Parliament until we had everyone. And now I think I understand why. I didn't realise before, Graham. Yeah, and if we'd got one person in, yeah, that would have been really interesting, because we would have literally been the joker in the pack. And you know, one of the images that we used to put forward of ourselves was the court jester. So, yeah.
It would have been really hard work for that person, but, I mean, they could have done some really great things.
Yeah, so
if they were tough enough not to be nobbled by, you know, the great big clobbering machine that is, you know, the wheels of Parliament.
Hard to keep your sense of humour in there, I feel.
Yeah, I mean, we did have one former McGillicuddy going on to the Greens, which was Maturia Ture, and she pulled a lovely little stunt with her maiden speech, because McGillicuddy's, we used to take the Blam 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 song, "There Is No Depression in New Zealand," and sing that to the tune of "God Defend New Zealand" as our anthem. You know, "There is no depression in New Zealand, there are no sheep on our farms." That, and Materia, at the end of her maiden speech, sang the national anthem in Māori, but she sang the McGillicuddy national anthem in Māori.
In Māori. Oh, so only a few people knew.
There were many confused looks in the house that day, apparently.
So people...
She irritated everybody with that, eh? The people who opposed to Te Reo getting popular, that annoyed them. And the people who wanted the serious Te Reo version of "There Is No Depression," "God Defend New Zealand," that annoyed them as well. Yes. It was a masterstroke, really.
And some people would have just been going, "This just doesn't seem right, but I don't know why."
Yeah.
So looking to the future, which is a funny question for a defunct party, but... I feel like we need something at the moment, and everyone's saying this is the most important election of all time, and I don't want to get trapped in that saying we need it more than ever, but it does feel like we need to poke fun at things a little. People just need to laugh more. Do you have any encouragement for anyone out there who wants to do something similar?
Penny?
Encouragement for someone who wants to do something similar. Yeah, I absolutely think they should go for it. If someone's, I mean, there's been other humorous parties. What was Gary McCormick's one? Was it the Smoko Party?
The Smoko Party, yeah. And the he had another one too. Pull Yourself Together Party.
Yeah,
There's been other ones. So. He didn't front up with any cash and contest in elections, though, did he?
Yeah, can't remember.
But he did a bloody good job.
Mm. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. And, I'm going to mention Winston Peters. Why?
No,
you know, there's two sides to that guy. You get the curmudgeon, grumpy, racist, reactionary side, and there's other sides when... Yeah, I sometimes think he's the joker in the pack. He can be quite amusing.
He does. When he gets the twinkle, if he ever gets the twinkle back in his eye.
If he gets the twinkle in the eye, yeah, he comes out with some good stuff occasionally. But, yeah.
And do people still ask you to reform?
All the time.
Yeah.
And we get lots of groups. No, actually not lots. Since 1999, we've had, I think, at least four groups apply to us, which is jolly decent of them, apply to us to take over the mantle and become the new McGillicuddy, the reformed McGillicuddy Serious Party. And we've looked at all of them quite closely.
Yeah.
And we've even had kind of, you know, a high-level clan elders meeting about one of them, but turned them all down.
Okay, so if the right people are out there, then they might get accepted.
It's not impossible, but I think that's the wrong approach. A better approach would be to come up with your own brand, your own name, your own ethos, and your completely own take on New Zealand, and flesh out an entire doctrine and a sort of a, you know, springboard from which to operate, and maybe it would be the equivalent of the Mikulete Serious Party, but trying to restart our party and trying to emulate it, I think, is a lost. That's a dead end.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They need to do their own thing, and having the ethos is really important. You know.
Yeah. Again, most of the ones. So out of the four, one we turned down because they're ideologically on a different tangent. They're just a bunch of young hippie socialists.
Yeah.
And the others, they were heading down the same path, but they were like the McGillicuddy, Clan McGillicuddy after, say, I don't know, 18 months, you know, so long before we formed a political party. So they hadn't thought things through enough and got their doctrines together enough, and, you know, they didn't have a big enough picture.
Okay.
It was just a funny costume and a silly name and three or four jokes strung together, you know. Well, that's an okay beginning.
Yeah.
But you need to do a lot more prep work
before
you take on New Zealand.
Yeah, Graham, if most of the existing parties came to us with that sort of, I mean, it wouldn't happen, but, you know, let's go out into absurdity again. If any of the existing parties came to us with their plan and asked for our endorsement, we'd turn them down on the same grounds.
Yeah, quite right.
Yeah. Hey, look.
Particularly all these odd parties with these names that, you know, they're just sort of vague names, and you think, what do you stand for? Oh. Or are you just a publicity vehicle for some charisma-based enterprise where you want more money, you know? But
there does seem to be an issue at the moment. Hey, look, guys, it's been really good to talk to you this morning. It's time for me to wrap things up. Folks, we've been talking to Graham Kenz and Penny Bousfield, former leader and former candidate of the now-defunct McGillicuddy Serious Party. I've told local MPs that I'm not talking to anyone this election who's close to getting their hands on power. So talking to people from a defunct party that didn't get very close to power kind of fits
no
very
power
well.
At all. With slipping through our hands.
And Penny told me I am doing a couple of serious political interviews, but not with political people. But I did one. Penny's just told me I interviewed Melia Sims about dental policies, which was quite a serious interview. But I've just been told she's a former member of the McGillicuddy Serious Party as well.
Oh, so. She's a former McGillicuddy, I think. I don't know if she was involved in the political stuff.
Right, but there's lots of you out there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we did have party membership, you know, so we, just like any normal party, people who thought we were good value and who didn't mind spending a dollar, we'd enlist them as members, just like you do. Mm. And so there's thousands of people in New Zealand who are former members of the party, just as, you know, the rank and file members, and good on them.
Yeah, and then there's McGillicuddy's in the sense of there were so many other things that we did. There was Clan McGillicuddy, there was the McGillicuddy Highland Army, there was street theatre, there was actual theatre, there were bands, there was, you know, the whole sort of arty-based scene. And yeah, the pacifist warfare was kind of like a art meets sport, theatre meets sport.
Mm, different for New Zealand at the time. Mm. Well, look, guys, thank you heaps for your time this morning, and I don't know, maybe we'll talk to you again at the next election. Who knows?
Thanks, Aaron.
You'll still be here.
You'll still be here. Yeah, all right. Thanks, Graham. Thanks, Penny. Bye.